So, connection over correction. If you've been serving in kids ministry or student family ministry, you've heard us say this before. Basically, what connection over correction means is the first thing you want to do is connect kids with each other, with us as leaders, and ultimately, then we will be able to then connect them with the Lord. Because if you think about it, if you are a kid who's never been to church before, and you're around all these people who are talking to face, I don't know if you heard the lesson in kids ministry, but it was a little bit like fire and brimstone. But there's like these two little girls, I'm like, okay. And they were very confused, and I'm sure it worked out great. But the thing is, it's like if you come in and you're teaching these things, like, if you don't feel safe as a person and you don't feel seen and, like, loved and appreciated, then you're probably going to be closed off if we're then pointing you to teach anything, like, specifically Jesus, because we're doing that. And so we first want to connect with kids before we ever taught them anything, which is why we play games with them, which is why we craft with them. Which is why we do games first in third, fourth, and fifth grade, because they especially, if they don't feel connected, then they're totally closed off. But if you're in first grade, it doesn't take long to connect with kids or with friends, because they're like, do you want to be my friend? Sure. And then they're best friends for life. And so that's how that goes. So we don't need to, it's just, our goal is connection. We're always trying to connect. And then in addition to that, say that we did need to correct a kid. We're doing it out of a place of first having connected with them, so that when we do need to speak into a situation or into their behavior a little bit, we're doing it from a place of, I'm telling you this because I love you, and they know that you love them because you've already played with them. So doing these connect games, talking with each other, doing this that we've just done, is very important to build connection with kids as well. And of course, if you want to connect with a kid, you have to do it through play. However, and the reason why this was such a big deal, and why we really have been like teaching this and hammering this in a little bit over the last, like, ever since we came back in from COVID, is because I found myself in seeing myself and other people in one of two camps. Either you grew, this is generally speaking, so if this is not your experience, please forgive me, but this is generally what I've seen, is either you grew up in the church and you yourself were a kid growing up in kids ministry, or you were a kids ministry volunteer for years, and you have all this history of like teaching kids the Bible or experiencing that for yourself. But what I personally have experienced, and I've seen other people come in with, is a lot of times people will come in with not a Christ-centered approach to kids' ministry. Unintentionally. Totally unintentionally. It's not the heart. But it's more like, I'm coming in and I'm going to teach you this really good biblical character trait. Or I'm going to come in and I'm going to teach you this very good moral. I'm going to come in and I want to have behavior modification, because that is the that is the result of having Jesus in your heart. But that's the problem, is you're not coming in teaching Jesus first. You're teaching a legalistic standpoint first. You're teaching them to act a certain way and behave a certain way. And that is not Christ-centered. So we have people coming in like that sometimes, and their goal is to go straight to correction. And again, that's not everybody, but generally speaking, that's kind of the like flavor that I have experienced years past, including my own experience. I have also done that, and I have been corrected in that way before. And on the flip side, maybe you're not a person who grew up in the church. You're a person who only is like their new believer. But that is also what the world says, is act a certain way, be a certain way, behave a certain way, be a good person. And if we're going straight to the kids being good people, then we're totally missing the point of making disciples. The goal is to make followers of Jesus, to make disciples, not good-behaving children. So when we go in straight to correction, we fully miss the connection. We're like, wait, pause. This is what we did 4 years ago. We need to connect with the kids. We really need to like be playing with them and interacting with them and hearing how their days are going and how their life is, and building friendships with them, so that when we do teach them about Jesus, we're doing it from that place first. And then if we do need to have a behavior modification or a correction of some sort, we're doing it from a place where they know that we love them and we care about them and we're not like out to get them or to be mean to them. So that is what connection over correction is, and that's what we have been doing these past years. But we have all, probably collectively, been experiencing a problem. We have really dove into connection over correction to the point where it's starting to feel like we're not in charge, but the kids are in charge. Has anybody experienced that in the class where it feels so out of control and the kids are really like leading the way to Lua? She's like, my class is definitely that way. Yeah, it can feel like it's pendulum.
It's not a word,
but I like it, so I made it up. We have pendulums too far, and now it's like the kids are in charge and we're not in charge. Where we are all connection, but there has been very little correction that has been taking place because it's a little scary to correct kids, and maybe we haven't equipped you well enough on how to correct kids. But thankfully, there is a balance between the two so that we're not, not going back and like going too far to one side or too far to the other. We don't want to be way into correcting, but we also don't want to be so far into connection where there is no correction. There's a middle ground. And so I have Lily Hunter here to share with us how to balance connection with correction. So, Lily Hunter.
Thank you, Anna. First of all, I'm going to make this a little bigger so I can see it. So in youth ministry, specifically junior high ministry, connection over correction is something that has proven to be absolutely invaluable. The ability to connect with a kid right where they're at, right? And I know growing up, I experienced this, possibly some of you did, going to large public schools. One of the sort of methods of correction that is used in large group can be, you know, public shaming for bad behavior. And, you know, sort of the main motivator for behaving was you didn't want to get called out in front of, you know, your peers in a way that would, you know, cause you to feel shamed. And so that's definitely a motivator for kids, but that's not the gospel, right? And in an effort to make an allowance for junior hires' faults, you know, coming into a relationship or into an environment where I am proactively making an allowance, I'm postured, I'm ready to forgive anyone who offends me, you know, that and the reason and the motivation for this is remembering and keeping before me the reality that the Lord has forgiven me, that the Lord has like sought me out, even in my rebellion, even in my at my worst. You know, Jesus came to serve and not be served. And our motivation should be the gospel. Like my heart for a junior hire to experience the love of God runs so deep that my goal is to be unoffendable. I desire to connect with junior hires to the point where I actively try to ask the Lord, God, why is it that I feel frustrated when this kind of a thing happens? Like, I know they're just screwing around. Like, and the Lord has grown so much patience in me over the years. However, there's always the time comes when, you know, things where you have to just say, you know, enough is enough, right? And where the inch that you've given out of grace starts to, you know, become a mile, so to speak. And where kids start to become destructive or they start, you know, acting in a way that's just unbecoming. And right. And so, like, you start to see that the fruit of our efforts is no longer producing gospel fruit. It's now producing like Lord of the Flies behavior. And so We want to be biblical, and we want to honor the Lord in the way that we address these kinds of things. And I love in Titus 3 the exhortation to when addressing a divisive person, it's like, as much as we want to just drive the semi truck into the glass front of the building and get right to the heart of the problem and pull it right out of there, it's like the word that's given in Titus is to give a first and a second warning, right? That the pattern being that we're to be patient, that we're not to act in anger, that we're not to allow frustration to guide us, right? And so we want to be preventative. We want to be engaging. We want to be fun, right? If we're not engaging and we're not fun, kids are going to fill the space with their own fun, right? Which can lead to the space feeling out of control. Junior high ministry feels that way for a lot of people often. But giving junior high kids the opportunity to have a voice means that you're going to have junior high voices in a room, right? Third, fourth, fifth graders, if you're giving opportunity for third, fourth, fifth graders to be fully who God's made them to be, that means it's going to be kind of messy. That means that they're not going to get things right. That means that they don't always know how to behave at the right time and in the right place. And so we need to enter into those relationships with a heart that makes an allowance for that. And in order to sort of, like, as a preventative measure, to come in prepared, like, okay, I'm going to have an activity today. We're going to organize something. We're going to do something fun today. We also can be preventative by setting expectations. Just letting kids know, we're going to transition. We're now going to, like, move from our time of story into a time of discussion, right? This is a time where we discuss the story. And here's the way this is going to work. Only one person talks at a time, okay? You guys understand that? One person talks at a time. So if I'm talking, right, and Abigail starts talking, we have a problem, right? Because that's two people talking at once, right? So the goal is that one person's going to talk, right? Like, really clearly setting expectations. And to help the students not only understand what's happening, but to get them on board. And so I would just challenge us as leaders to prayerfully use inviting vocabulary that invites students to be part of the process rather than putting them in a place where they feel like they're the problem. And so the process is discussion time. We want to invite them into that. Like, hey, here's what we're going to do. You're a part of this, right? Like, discussion means more than one person talking. So you're going to talk, and she's going to talk. Like, we're all going to talk, but here's what that looks like, you know? Can we agree to do that? Can we help with that? And then that sort of, like, sets the expectations for the group. And that's a great way to be proactive and preventative going in. And then what we want to do is we want to just make sure we're addressing issues as they happen and not letting things pile up. And this is where it's been hard, because I confess, we've been really trying to share connection over correction for so long now that maybe some of you guys might be like, well, when do we actually correct? Like, I've not been correcting because I don't want to, like, overstep, or I don't want to, bring the iron curtain down all of a sudden, whatever. And it's important that we recognize it. It's actually vital that we address things as they come up. You don't want situations to become, so extensive. And so, like, week to week, they've been, there's new expectations that have been created. And now you have to, like, pull back. Now, if that's happened, it's important that you pull back, right? And you might need help with that in your classroom. And Anna would love to help you with that, or the coordinator that day, would love to help you with that. But if you're like, my class feels out of control, and it's because kids, speak out of turns, because we want to help you, like, create some kind of a structure that you could invite the students into and just be like, hey, this is how discussion time is going to look. And, who can tell me how many people are talking at once, and, like, inviting them to understand in such a way that they're able to participate and be a part of the solution and be a part of what you're laying out. And when we address issues as they happen, so when people start to cut each other off or they start joking around, it's important that we address the group first. And even when it's obvious that it's one kid, Because you don't want to go right to the, like, singling a person out and shaming them in front of the whole, like, our motivation isn't to, like, shame them into being quiet, even though in our flesh that is exactly what all of us want in that moment, right? But that's not going to create connection with that kid. That's not going to demonstrate the gospel, right? That's where we're like, there's zero allowance for your faults, and I'm just going to, like, drive the Mack truck into you right now, right? We want to make an allowance and be like, okay, if one of you guys is just incessantly, like, making comments to other people talking, be like, all right, hold on. Guys, remember, there's just one of us are speaking at a time, right? So that means when one person's talking, someone else in the room doesn't talk, right? Like, addressing the group, giving that student or that, maybe there's a couple of them, the opportunity to hear that and receive it as grace, right? That they're being addressed as a part of the group. And then if the behavior doesn't change, you want to address a smaller group of people, right? Like, okay, so like you guys up here in the front row, I'm hearing some chatter, even though I know it's Abigail and it's all your fault, right? I was just wondering if maybe you guys can help each other, you know, wait your turn or keep it, whatever. But again, like, extending grace to more than one student, just allowing them to, like, okay, it's kind of narrowing in here, right? And the third address, you want to make sure you're addressing the person. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, I know, like, with me when I was a kid, and I happen to very well know an 8-year-old kid right now that doesn't sit still for very long. I have a lot of him in my life. And sometimes the challenge is with, like, having, like, an 8-year-old boy sitting still for 15 minutes, right? Like, he just, like, physically cannot do that, right? Like, he needs to, like, move. And sometimes we just need to start getting a little more creative in the way that we, you know, control the environment where kids are learning. We obviously don't want just to descend into, like, sharks and minnows immediately, you know, like, oh, they got to move, let's go outside and play a huge game. But, you know, we need to maybe have kids walk around with the coordinator. If they're being disruptive in their not moving, right, if they're not able to be quiet while they move, right, like, they might need to go take a walk with the coordinator. But please, it's not a failure on the teacher's part if you need to call the coordinator to get help, because you've got a classroom full of students, and the coordinator is here to help you, here to support you. So if you're on, like, third warning with a kid and you're like, this kid's just not sitting still, right? And we're not going to go outside and play sharks and minnows because we're, like, 2 minutes into what's supposed to be a discussion. You just, like, see if you can get the coordinator, send your assistant out or grab the coordinator real quick and just be like, hey, you know, like, could you maybe take this kid around for a walk a little bit, have him help you out, or have a conversation with him about, you know, the ability to not speak when other people are speaking, because we're having challenges with that. It's not a failure on the teacher's part to call the coordinator. And if the kid does need a break, let them walk around and decide for themselves that they're ready to rejoin the class, right? If they don't, then we just would call their parent. But, you know, that's why we have a coordinator, especially for the upper elementary kids. Like, if we have a kid that's just not a part of the group and is being so disruptive that you're not able to have class, it may get to the point where, you know, we might have to just, you know, have the parents come and grab the kid. So it's not a failure on the part of the teacher, and we want to encourage you guys to take the steps that are available to you. Because it is a bummer when you're not able to have a time of sharing, or have a time of teaching, or have a time of, like, lollipops and lemons and allowing kids to communicate and connect in that environment. It's a very important time. It's a part of a very important part of kids ministry. And so we want to manage the students in a loving and kind way, the individual ones, especially the ones that can be disruptive. But we also want to make sure that we're honoring, like, this thing that God's given us and shown us in terms of making disciples of the kids. And so there does come a time where we need to, you know, we address the group, we address a smaller group, we address the individual, we invite the coordinator to come and help. And we possibly might have, you know, the coordinator's discretion if the kid's not choosing to come back and be back involved in the class and, you know, with the right heart and commitment to settle in, then maybe the parents do need to be called. So I wanted to just share that with you guys, because I don't know, we felt like we needed to kind of give you guys permission to sort of activate the coordinator in that way. And it's not viewed as like a failure. It's not viewed as like, oh, this person's really hammering the kids, right? Like we, you, especially those of you in upper elementary that have a large group of kids in the classroom, this can be an incredible tool. And especially for the kids that need to walk around, or the kids that need to just kind of like be detached from being the center of, you know, the center of attention for a moment, and then kind of re-engage, it can make all the difference for that student, and it can make all the difference for the class. So are there any questions about that? Cool. Sometimes you got to call the cops, you know? I mean, when I was in high school, I didn't know that. Now I do.
You would consider, like, just if you're in a discussion or whatever, like, separating kids after a couple of warnings, that's not part of the issue.
Yeah, I mean, if you're able to, if you have enough help in the room to where you're able to have a one-on-one conversation with a kid and give them an opportunity to kind of spend time, you know, away to come and rejoin. You know, the invitation is always to come and rejoin, but you're agreeing to what we're doing, you know.
I think what he means is like,
I think what he's asking is like, because he works with 5-year-olds and kindergartners, and sometimes they just won't stop talking to each other, and so you just separate the two. Mm-hmm. One on either side of the carpet, or either side of you, that's fine. That's not publishing. That's just like, oh, okay, I can see that you need a little help. It's hard to not be so excited. I get that, but remember right now, we're like listening. So to help you, how about you sit over here and you sit over here? And that's not public shame at all. Any other questions?
Cool.
Well, thank you so much for listening to that. But before we break off, I want to spend, we have a few minutes